Today, we're simply having a chat about how I'm doing after my mastectomy. Hi, I'm Jessica Vallant, a physical therapist and Pilates teacher, and I want to bring science-based knowledge, empathy, courage, support, love, and hopefully some fun to the journeys we have with our bodies. There is hope and strength in your body, and my goal is to help you find it. Hi, and welcome back to Meet Your Body. This is, I think, the first episode in 5 weeks, maybe? Posted my last one maybe a week or two before my surgery, and somehow now I'm almost 4 weeks after my surgery, and here we are. I've got my headphones on, I've got my microphone, and I actually planned on recording this 2 weeks ago because I had my YouTube video come out. It was kind of a two-week recap after my surgery, after my double mastectomy. And I try to do like the podcast and the YouTube, you know, in the same week to kind of partner up. And I usually give a little more info here just because we have a longer time to talk. And I don't know, the days just kept coming and going. And I can't say that I was too busy to do it. I just didn't want to do it. I think the podcast feels more intimate. You know, it's just us talking. I'm just sitting at my desk talking, and somehow it made it more real. And so I think I've been maybe avoiding it. So now I'm almost 4 weeks, and I could definitely keep avoiding it, but also I want to get this down. I want to get it down for my memory for the future, but also for anyone else going through this, because I know it could help me right now if I had someone to listen to. So hopefully this will help someone in the future. So today I'll just tell you, I mean, how I'm doing 4 weeks after surgery. I'll give a quick recap as to, you know, the context around this, but how things have been for the first 4 weeks, where I am now, what things might look like going forward. And then the big thing I do want to talk about is I'll have a list for anyone who does have to go through this, or if you have a friend or a family member, I'm going to have a list of things that I recommend having that were really helpful to me having in this first month. So we'll kind of cover all of that today. So for background, for anyone who is new or hasn't gone back to listen to previous episodes, in December of 2023, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, and my type was stage 0 DCIS. That is ductal carcinoma in situ. And what that means is it is cancerous and it is in the ducts, but it hasn't spread outside the ducts yet, which is what makes it stage 0 actually. So it hasn't spread outside the ducts. It's not invasive, which is the highest percentage of breast cancer when it's diagnosed as invasive. And mine is not. It was DCIS. And it was diagnosed from a routine mammogram. I never felt a lump. And having talked to my doctor since then, she believes I never would have because of the appearance of it on pathology later on. So I never felt a lump. I never had pain. I never had any symptoms. I'm 46 years old. I was actually 45 when I was diagnosed. It was a week before my birthday. So I was 45 when I was diagnosed. So I just had my yearly routine mammogram. And 4 years ago, I had an abnormal mammogram and had a biopsy, which came back normal. But I was told I had dense breast tissue. So when it came up again this time, the radiologist thought it was just the same thing, but she's like, out of an abundance of caution, I think we should do a biopsy again. So I had my routine mammogram. It came back abnormal. I had the second imaging, which is what they'll typically do. They do another image. I think it's another mammogram, but just with more in-depth imaging, and the radiologist reads it on site. So you'll know right away if you need a biopsy or not. So she was there. She sat me down. Like, they put me in a room and said, the doctor wants to see you. So I knew probably something was going on. And she said, you know, this, it looks like the same thing I saw before, but it's grown. She's like, I don't know why it's grown in the past year since your last normal mammogram. So I think, out of an abundance of caution, we should have it biopsied. It'll probably come back to be nothing. Okay. So I had it biopsied. And then December 5th, I got the call that I had breast cancer. And so that started the long process. And I guess I'll go through that here again if anyone is brand newly diagnosed listening to this. Right away, I got the call from, you know, the radiologist telling me that the biopsy had come back positive and what it showed, and that I would be getting a call from a nurse navigator in the oncology system within the hospital. And I did that day, which was unbelievably helpful to have a nurse navigator, and you most likely will if you are ever put in this situation. And that is someone to help you coordinate appointments, at least from the beginning. Like, she helped me less and less as time went on, and I'm not working with her anymore now, but at least at the very beginning, it was helpful to tell me, you know, this is who you're going to need to see. These are the doctors, because there's multiple. This is the system we're putting you in. I had a choice to do my own research and go outside of that system if I wanted to, but honestly, I didn't. I knew the hospital. I liked the hospital. I did just enough asking around in a couple days to know a few people who had used that system and liked them. So, and I really appreciated having this nurse navigator, and they called me that afternoon and talked me through what the next few weeks would look like, and they answered a few of my questions, and I was obviously in a fog and in a haze, and I just it was a whirlwind and surreal. And I don't have a family history of breast cancer whatsoever at all. It really was not on my radar at all. And yet here we were. So the process was, yeah, I saw the nurse navigator. I saw the breast surgeon and the oncologist. Those were the two first doctors I needed to see. And they basically, the nurse navigator said, we're just going to have you see whoever you can get into first of those two. So I think it was just the next week that I happened to see the surgeon first. And then I saw the oncologist next. And in that time, I also had to have a breast MRI. So that's the next test they want to have done. And that is just a more specific imaging and checks your lymph nodes on imaging to see what they're kind of dealing with. And that's what the surgeon goes by the biopsy and pathology from that and from the MRI. So I had that done. Saw the surgeon who, again, specializes on all this. And she said, basically, with DCIS, the options are a lumpectomy with radiation afterwards. So the lumpectomy is where they'll just take out the tumor. And then typically you'll need radiation afterwards to help get any other cancerous cells that they couldn't get on the surgery. And then typically you're also on medication like a tamoxifen for years afterwards to help, again, shrink or destroy any other cells that might be involved. And that depends on a lot of different things that I just don't have knowledge about and can't get into, but there's something called an oncotype that they can test your tumor. And then also there's receptors on the tumor, so you're going to find out if your tumor does respond to that kind of medication, if it's estrogen positive or has estrogen receptors. There's a lot of stuff that goes on with that. And so that is where the oncologist comes in. That's the doctor who specializes in cancer, the oncologist who reads all of that and tells you what your treatment might look like. So I saw the surgeon who's told me that my tumor was very large and a lumpectomy was, she said, she's like, ethically, I cannot recommend a lumpectomy to you and I would not do that, because I am very small chested and a lumpectomy basically would take my entire breast. She said, so ethically, I can recommend a mastectomy in this case to make sure we remove the entire tumor. And honestly, this is again something, and maybe I'll just keep talking throughout this whole thing about things, but I've also gotten a lot of questions from you on Instagram. And so I'll do a frequently asked questions episode later on. So I won't get into maybe all of the details on it right now, but for me going in, I had an idea that a mastectomy might be an option, and I already knew that if they told me that it was, I would say, please just do both. I personally, okay, this is just 100% personal, which one of The best advice I got from women who had gone through this during this time for me was, you do what's right for you. You make the decision that is right for you, because honestly, there are a lot of decisions to make and you make them in a short amount of time and you're choosing from a lot of bad options. Nobody wants to be in this position. I never, ever wanted to have to choose, oh, do I have a unilateral mastectomy or bilateral? Do I have implants? What do I do? I never wanted that choice. So you're choosing between things you were hoping in your life you would never have to choose from. And you have to do it really quickly. So I, after just having a few days to think about that as an option and knowing myself and talking to my husband and my family and really just mostly just what I felt most comfortable with, a unilateral mastectomy, so one side, held no interest for me. If I am going through this major surgery, I didn't want to have the opportunity for a cancer to grow on the other side later on. Like, I would still have to get mammograms on the other side. I would have to deal with one side. Anyway, that, for me personally, if you're taking one side, just take them both. And I'll deal with that. I'll have that because, again, I'm under anesthesia anyway. And then the oncologist with you, take all the information they're giving you, the oncologist and the surgeon, the information that they had, they felt very confident that with the type of cancer I had, that if I had both breasts removed and they got out as much as they could, as long as it wasn't in the lymph nodes, then I would be good going forward. I would not have even a higher incidence of recurrence than someone who'd never had breast cancer. And I wouldn't need the, obviously I wouldn't need the radiation at that point. And I might not even need medication, that this might be all I needed. So with all that information, and again, with me personally being prepared for that in those 2 days, that's just what felt like for me. I didn't want to have to worry every year after that with mammograms and everything. So that was what I chose, and it was per the surgeon recommendations anyway. And then you decide if you want to have implants or if you want any kind of reconstruction, which would be implants. You can do a flap. There are various reconstruction options. And that, too, was just me personally. Yes, I did. Again, I'm 46. I don't know. That was just me. Okay. I didn't ever want to have to choose it. I know implants have their own issues. But that was what would make me feel like my most self, I think, afterwards. And I explained this on Instagram, so I'll just say it quickly, but I think it has to do with, I've had a lot of medical issues in my life and I feel like I've worked really, really hard to be partners with this body. And I don't know. And for me, the best way to continue doing that after a mastectomy was to have implants, for whatever reason. And I can't psychologically delve into myself right now to decide why, but it was, I wanted to look most like myself. I still wanted all my clothes to fit. I didn't want that extra added journey of a body that I didn't recognize as much and having new clothes and prosthesis, like that just wasn't mentally where I could go. So because I chose implants, then I had a plastic surgeon I worked with too. So 3 main doctors, oncologist, a surgeon, and a plastic surgeon. And luckily my surgeon and plastic surgeon work very closely together. So that is one thing I would recommend if that's an option for you, that they work together regularly. It was so seamless. The two offices talked to each other. They helped figure out the surgery time and the nurse navigator helped. And I shouldn't say seamless. Actually, there were a lot of hiccups in the road. The first surgeon I was referred to, we found out wasn't in network. So that was probably the most stressful day of all this to me is, my husband and I on the phone for half the day trying to figure out, like, do I push back surgery? And what does that do? What are my chances? What happens to my health if we push back surgery? And should we switch insurance? And who else can I see? So I did have to switch surgeons a few weeks in, but luckily I hadn't even met with the other surgeon yet. And I love the surgeon I ended up with, so it worked out fine. Then they had to change the surgery date on me. So you will have to do a lot of advocating and a lot of phone calls on your own and a lot of following up with people. But I will say, being in the medical world, both as a physical therapist for 23 years and having multiple health issues and multiple surgeries I've dealt with, the people in this whole journey in oncology have been the kindest, by far. The kindness, the most willing to listen to my questions, to answer my emails, to be patient with me. And I've been very, very thankful for that. So that's how that whole surgery and process happened. And I was diagnosed on December 5th, and I had surgery on January 18th. So it felt really slow and all of that. When you're in the middle of it, when you're told you have cancer, like, it stops time. That's all I can say. Like, it puts you in this time warp of stopping time, but also making you just not even aware of what's happening. Like, you lose time. I feel like I lost days in there of being the first 2 weeks. I just wondered if my brain would ever work again. I felt so foggy and so hazy. I had no idea what was going on. I had to take notes on everything because I would forget things. I feel like I didn't even know where I was driving sometimes. I mean, really, I was like, oh my gosh, am I ever going to have my brain work again? And then you kind of settle into that's your reality, and your brain starts working a little bit again. But yet at the same time, it's still all surreal. It's still really surreal to me. So that it happened pretty quickly for me. And yeah, January 18th, I had a double mastectomy with implants. Now, there's something I want to say here, because I was able, and it was the only option offered to me, which was fabulous, but I had mastectomy straight to implant. It's direct to implant, actually. Double mastectomy direct to implant, meaning same surgery. The same surgery. My surgeons worked together. They were both there. I had my breasts removed and implants put in the same surgery. And I don't think that's that common. A lot of people talk to me about expanders and other things. And I just want you to know, if you're listening, that that may be an option. And if your surgeons haven't brought it up to you, maybe just ask, because I am so thankful that it was able to be done in one surgery. So that's one thing I just want you to be aware of. That is an option. And it might not be for everyone, because there are different situations. Mine allowed for it, and my surgeons were used to doing it. So there might be different reasons, but just know that that option is out there, and maybe ask about it. The other thing to ask about that I did not know about in this whole process is, when you have a double mastectomy, you are numb most likely the rest of your life in certain areas. Your feeling doesn't come back. The nerves are so damaged. I found that out a few weeks after getting my diagnosis. And I thought, well, that's a bummer, but I guess that's just part of the deal. And then met with my surgeon, or talked to one of the surgeons, who just in passing, the nurse said, oh, by the way, and are you having the nerve graft? And I said, what? Are you having the nerve graft? I said, I'm sorry, I do not know what you're talking about. And she said, oh, this was over the phone when I was trying to schedule with the first surgeon, who I ended up not using because of insurance. But she said, well, it's still considered experimental in Colorado, but the surgeon does a nerve graft where you could end up with feeling again. I said, oh, that's awesome. Tell me about that. Well, insurance doesn't cover it. My insurance. Okay, some do. I have a colleague whose insurance did cover this in another state. But here in this state, my insurance does not cover it. She said, this is the amount it'll be out of pocket, which was very high. Okay, five figures high. Double five. I mean, like, high. To me, high. And I said, okay, I don't think that's an option. No, or we won't be doing that. Thank you. So I talked to my husband. We said, no. I mean, it's not even 100% that it would come back. That kind of money is not worth risking. So no. And I didn't think again about it. Switch surgeons. They also then, plastic surgeon, asked in passing. And I said, I don't think we're going to spend that money out of pocket. But yes, why don't you go ahead and tell me about it, since this is a new office. She told me about it. The cost was less than half. I mean, it was so much less with her. And she said, you know, she talked me through it with you and your anatomy and this and this. I actually think you have a really high chance of it going really well. And so we decided to do it. So I had the nerve graft. And like I said, it was 25% of the cost. And I'm just giving that, I'm throwing that out there for you too, if you're listening, just to ask, that's all. And if you're given a high price, just again, ask, is there another surgeon that might be less? And honestly, if I had originally been with the surgeon I really wanted or loved, I would not have switched just for that. I really don't think I would have, because that was kind of that was almost just icing on the cake, you know, of, okay, if I end up getting feeling back, cool, great. It was much more important to me to get the cancer out of my body and to have then the plastic surgeon who I trusted, who worked with my surgeon, who did really good work. Like, I want them to look a certain way. That was more important to me. The nerve graft was kind of, like I said, icing on the cake. But because the price was so much less, it felt like a good risk. So I'm telling you that just so you have information, because this is all information I had no idea about, that I feel like I had to make decisions in the moment that I was asked in passing, when I had 1,000 other appointments and insurance calls and things to be dealing with, not to mention the emotions of it all and having 2 young kids. It was a lot. So hopefully having this information ahead of time helps. And there's also a lot of things that I'm not covering here because I have other resources for them. So if you are having a surgery around this at all and you haven't had surgery before, or maybe you have, I have a YouTube video and a podcast episode about how to prep for surgery. And this is any surgery, but the things you really need to do beforehand. So please go listen to that, because I have some great information there and all my advice about how you prep for surgeries, because there's a lot of things, in my opinion, that need and should be done to make your life easier afterwards and to help your healing. So make sure you go find those, and I will have them linked in the description below as well. So after that whirlwind of 2 months, I went in for my surgery itself. And typically, and again, if you listen to my episodes about how to prep for surgery, you'll know you want to ask the surgeons ahead of time a million questions, which I did. So I knew some of what to expect when I woke up, but not all of it. But personally, and one thing, actually, let me say this. All I know is my experience, okay, which means a double mastectomy straight to implant. So all I can talk on is my experience with that specific surgery, in addition to my specific doctor and my specific surgeons. So know that your experience could be different. And I have had people say to me, many people, oh, mine didn't look that, they didn't do that for me, or I didn't have that, or this, or this. This is my specific experience with what I had. So yours might look different. But one thing I can say that sounds pretty universal is you will wake up from surgery with a compression bra. I was all wrapped, and I was wrapped up. Like, I had bandages, saran wrap, like literal saran wrap all around my chest, and then a compression bra on. And drains, okay? The drains are meant to decrease the swelling and eliminate the fluid in your chest. And they literally are tubes that go into your breasts, or your breast area, the chest area. They come out along your ribs on either side, and they hang down to these little bulbs at the bottom. And I had mine for 2 weeks. Now, I've had talked to people who had them for 1 week. I've talked to people who had them for 3 weeks. And I've talked to people who had 4 drains, 2 on each side. I had 1 on each side, and I had them for 2 weeks. And that was a non-negotiable for my doctor. Like, no matter what, they were going to be in for 2 weeks. And then I went home like that. And the drains, there's just no way to say it other than they are a bummer. They're a big old bummer, and everyone says it, okay? Everyone says it, so I'm just going to lay it out for you too, to expect it, to be prepared for those weeks to be a bummer. You need to drain them multiple times a day, and then you write down the output, how much liquid came out of them, and the doctor uses that to kind of determine how your healing is going. That's one of the many things. For me personally, the drains, for 2 reasons, were extra bummer. One is somehow just where the drain site was. It was right where the compression bra was, and I just had a lot of pain where it came out. Like, I don't know if it was the stitch that was there or what. So it just added extra pain for me. And then the other thing is one of the drains, and I talked to my surgeon about this, and she said, oh yeah, the nerve graft, I think it's going to take. It went really well. It was beautiful. It was awesome. And also, I had to lay it down next to the drain. So whenever we change my drains, I had horrible nerve pain. That doesn't happen to most people. That's just what happened to me. So the drains were not fun. And I'm going to get into some of the things you need around the drains when I talk to you about some things you'll need after surgery, but just expect that. And then you'll have, like I said, a compression bra on. And so I wore that. So for the first week, I didn't take that off at all. Like, I had no idea what I looked like. I knew nothing. I had to keep that on. Then I saw the surgeon after a week, and she removed the Saran wrap and everything so I could see, put the compression bra back on. And then a week later, I had the drains out. And things got a little better, definitely, when the drains were out. And everyone will tell you that too. Like, so I personally couldn't shower. I couldn't get the drain sites wet. A lot of people seem to be surprised about that. As a PT, I wasn't surprised. You can't really get open wounds wet. So I don't know. It wasn't a surprise to me that I couldn't shower during that whole time. But I did take baths just up to my belly button. I took warm baths in the morning and tried to kind of wash myself a little bit. Just know it's hard to move with the drains. Your restrictions, typically you can't really move your arms much for 2 weeks. They call them T-Rex arms. So I could brush my teeth. I could wash my face eventually by leaning down into the sink and using a washcloth. I could, you know, drink water in my coffee. And I mean, that was about it. Like, my husband dressed me the first few days, everything for me the first few days. My daughter brushed my hair and put my hair in a ponytail. I had to sleep propped up. So I'm still sleeping on my back. I don't know when I'll be allowed to sleep on my side again. But for the first week, I was propped up on the couch, the only way I could get somewhat comfortable. And then eventually I got to the bed with four pillows and then three. And now, 4 weeks later, I'm actually just down to my one pillow. But I have to stay on my back still. And I still have to wear a compression bra constantly. I think that's going to last about 3 months. I don't know. I'll ask my doctor that too this week. But those are two things still happening. I'm able to lift my arms up to shoulder height per physical therapy. I've had one physical therapy visit. I can lift them to shoulder height. I can't lift anything yet. What else is going on with me now at 4 weeks? I have some cording. So during surgery, typically they're going to do something called a sentinel node biopsy. So for me, they took one lymph node and they needed to do it to check if the cancer had spread. And so you do have to be aware of your lymphatic system. Typically, like, a true lymphedema is not, you're not at high risk for true lymphedema after one lymph node being removed. That being said, your lymph system is under trauma. And so I do have a teeny bit of swelling, and I only know that because the physical therapist took measurements. So it's just a little bit in my arm, but I do have something called cording, which is, I don't even know exactly. I have to look into it. I know what it feels like. I know what it is, but I can't even tell you exactly anatomically what's happening. And my understanding is there's still some misunderstandings around cording, but basically I have, it's almost like a guitar string really tight in my armpit and into my arm. And that's just a indicator that my lymph system is overstressed and over-traumatized. So I'm doing some work on that myself. So I have that going on. And what else? Oh, I'm walking. So I was walking from the first day because, again, it's recommended. It helps with digestion and blood clots and circulation and so many things that the doctor said to do it. So I have a walking pad at home, and I think I walked maybe 10 minutes the first day, like first day after surgery. I started my first walk outside about 4 days later with my family. I mean, I made sure people were with me so I was safe. And at this point now, so almost 4 weeks afterwards, I can do walks like up to 40 minutes. I'm slower for sure. I get more tired. I definitely have fatigue overall. I definitely have some brain fog. But I can walk outside for like 40 minutes. I can lay down on my back again, finally, like on my mat, and do some stretches or just some leg work or some bridges, which feels really nice. I have a few stretches from physical therapy I can do. I can do like some squats and some step ups. I've been trying to keep my legs strong, but I don't hold any weight whatsoever. This is all just body weight work. So that's kind of the movement that I'm doing. And again, after asking my surgeon, I'm doing scar massage. And then I guess the biggest thing that's going on for me, people want to know about pain. I think I'm unique in that I have something going on called hypersensitivity. And so that means my nerves, and this isn't from the nerve graft, actually, this is just from healing and from so many nerves being destroyed during the surgery. My nerves are very hypersensitive, like a live wire. If you picture a live wire, that's what's happening in my entire chest and into my armpits. So anything touching them makes me extremely pain, like in a lot of pain and uncomfortable. And we're talking anything. Water from the shower, definitely bras, me massaging them, just my hair hanging on my chest, a t-shirt, anything. And it is exhausting and discouraging, to be honest, and very painful and kind of misunderstood. And so I don't know if I wasn't having that. I don't know what my normal pain would be. Like, my scars are still pretty numb, but they're sore. When the feeling is coming back in that part, it's sore, but what I would expect to be sore, you know, just it's major soreness from big scars. But mostly what I feel is this hypersensitivity, like they're on fire or like they're big open wounds that somebody's touching all the time. So I'm working on that. My doctor changed my medication a little bit, and I see her this week, and I'm doing a lot of desensitization work, and I'm going to see a PT hopefully who specializes in it. So that's where I am with that part. So it's a bummer, but otherwise, according to my doctors, I'm healing beautifully and healing well and right on track. And I just know this is a long process. I know that from surgeries. I was under anesthesia more than 4 hours. So that alone takes months and months to get out of your system. I tell everyone, myself as a PT, when they have surgery, that it'll take a year before all the dust settles. So I know that too. I know that I'm just in the very beginning of this. I'm giving myself to the 3 month mark. I feel like the 2 week mark was a really big one when drains come out, which does feel phenomenal. So that feels like a really big one. And then I feel like there's kind of another mini milestone when I'm able to lift again and I can start doing some real rehab and strengthening on my arms. That feels like important to me. I think that's around 6 weeks. So that feels good, like a good little next milestone. And then I feel like 3 months when I can start hopefully laying on my side, hopefully start with some, you know, normal bras and just feeling more normal in my body again. So those are the jumps I'm looking forward to. And then I look at 6 months of, okay, we're halfway there, and then a year. And I just really am really, really trying to stay positive through kind of this nerve pain. And I'm really trying to look each day as, okay, is it any better? Is it any better at all? Like last night, I slept through the night. And that's huge. That's a really, really big deal. So I'm trying to focus on those positives, as well as the fact that I'm on this side now. And it's an interesting place to be emotionally, because like I said, I still don't have full pathology back from the oncologist. I'm hoping that's tomorrow. So I don't know exactly what our next steps are. So I'm just really focusing on my healing. And to me, healing is a full-time job right now. And I have another job, which is this. I love talking to you guys and seeing Zoom clients and doing content. And I have to figure out now what kind of workouts I can film for the next month or so. And like I said, I have 2 young kids, and we're in the midst of all the spring. It's not quite spring, but, you know, all the Valentine's school parties and all the things they need and the exciting performances they have coming up. And so, honestly, I feel like just I'm in a weird place of I'm not in those first 2 weeks of complete and utter fog, you know, healing after surgery. Anything. I'm at a point where I need to start getting back into life. And yet I know I'm not even close to healed yet. So it's just that balance of how to give what I need to give and want to give, and also making sure I'm absolutely allowing time for all the things, you know, PT exercises, all my desensitization, I'm doing red light therapy. making sure I'm taking all the good things into my body through nutrition and supplements and all of that, making sure I'm resting and trying to sleep. You know, it's a lot to balance, and I don't have the answer for how to do it. I just know that I'm trying to get my self-care, like PT, done in the morning. I have about an hour morning routine now that I do to really make sure I focus on that. Then I get into work for a few hours. I can really focus and still feel good. Then I go on my long walk and then get the kids from school, and then they come home and I play games with them, but I do it like on the couch. I say, guys, I'm going to lay on this couch now for quite a while, but we can play cards and do any of that. And then I just end up kind of trying to lay and rest for a couple hours while I hang out with them. And then I get a little more energy to help with dinner and bedtime routine, and then I crash. So I have a little bit of a routine, and it's not perfect. And my body will tell me what it needs, and my job is simply to listen. So I want to go into a few things that were really, really helpful to me to have for the first few weeks. So again, if this is you in the future, or if you are supporting someone as a friend or a family member going through it, these could be really nice things. And I'm going to have, I have a resource guide, okay, a breast cancer resource guide, and I will have the link below in the description of this episode, and you can go there for links for all of these products. So don't worry about it. You can find it there. So some things to need, or some things that you will need, and honestly, this is maybe the most important one somehow, is something to hold your drains. And I say that it might be the most important because, again, no one, I was so lucky to have a couple friends and colleagues and members who had walked this path before who sent me, one, a belt, an amazing Unlimited member, homemade a drain belt for me. And when she said she was doing it, I thought, well, that's great, but I just thought it was really nice. I did not understand how important this thing was going to be for me for 2 weeks, and she sent it to me. So I had a drain belt that was made, and then I have another amazing friend who has a nonprofit called Hope Chest, and I'm going to have the link because this is a really great one, and you can make a donation and send them a hoodie sweatshirt that has drain holders in it. So between those two things, I wore at least one of them every single day when I had my drains. So the belt was really handy at night because I could wear like an oversized t-shirt or something that I could, that my husband could get on me. And then I had the drain belt to hold the drains. And then I wore that hoodie almost every single day, zip up hoodie with drain holders inside. So I'm going to have the link to that specific one. And then also there are some other things you can get. I mean, honestly, you can go just Google drain holders, and somebody gave me a set of pajamas, which was really nice, button-up pajama top with drain holders and pants. There's cardigan sweaters. There's a lot, but it's really, really, really helpful to have some piece of clothing to hold the drains. And that was, again, not something that I knew at all about beforehand. So I'll have links to those. The next thing that kind of goes along with that is loose clothing. Just all the loose things. Loose pants is a really big one because you can't really use your arms. So the only thing I could pull up, and this wasn't, my husband had to help me the first couple days, but after that I could pull up my own pants, but they had to be really loose joggers. Like I couldn't fit into my workout leggings or anything like that because I couldn't pull them up. You can't use your arms enough to do that, at least with my surgery, okay? Maybe it was the implant piece, but I wasn't allowed to use my arms enough to pull up my own pants if they were tight. So I wore loose joggers and loose sweatpants, and then all like button-up or zip-up tops. And then the other piece that I wore every day, and this is in the breast cancer resource guide, but there is this 2-pack of tank tops, really affordable tank tops, that were super stretchy that I could just step into and pull up. So literally every day I had that compression bra on, but I could put on this tank top over it and then put my hoodie on. That's what I wore every single day. So loose clothing is absolutely a necessity. And then also some way to be propped up in bed or on a couch. And I planned that ahead of time we had like this special pillow. We just had it in the house. I did not buy anything special for this, but you can. There are lots of specialized pillows if you want. I just had some things in the house and I just had them kind of ready, but I used quite a few pillows. I used this, I don't even know what it's called, but kind of this thing we have where the kids lean against it to read. I had that. I had an ottoman for my feet and I had blankets. So you'll want some area. I have a colleague who rented a recliner for 2 weeks, and I think that probably was awesome. I mean, I would say that's the way to go if you can. It just didn't really work out in our house, and I still wanted to be up close to the kids, even though I couldn't help them with anything. I really wanted to be upstairs with our family. That I thought originally I was going to be downstairs on the couch, but that just from a healing, like a peaceful standpoint a little bit, that didn't sound good to me. It just didn't from my heart, honestly. So we were able to have a couch in our bedroom so that I could be on the same level as everyone else. And my husband has said that that was really helpful to him because he would wake up through the night and could check on me. And honestly, that is important, just to have someone close by. So that's what I did for myself, but have a way to be propped up, have a way to be able to sleep at least as comfortably as possible. Another thing that can be helpful is something called a mastectomy pillow. I have that linked in the resource guide too, and lots of different places make them, so there are different kinds. But basically, it's a pillow that goes across your front and then has these armholes so that it kind of wraps around your side too. And it's just meant to protect that area. So let's say you're sitting on the couch, if you happen to have a dog or if you do have young kids, or anything that you feel like might jostle you or press on that area, the pillow protects it a little bit. I didn't use it actually as much as I thought I would, but the times I did, it was invaluable. So I'm so glad I had it. I used it at night, and it was, I don't know, it just added this bit of protection and gave me somewhere for my arms to go. So it was really nice to have it at night. And then I think the first couple of days I did use it on the couch, but mostly my kids are old enough to kind of understand not to bounce and things around me, so I didn't need it as much for that. But I was really glad for the few times that I did have it. Next one, and this seems like a strange, silly one, but a cup with a straw. So again, I kind of knew ahead of time, like I use these heavy, big glasses to drink water out of at our house. And I knew I wasn't going to probably be able to lift those to my mouth for the first few days, but that I, and that was one piece. And the other piece was I wanted something that held a lot of water so I didn't have to refill it all day because I wanted to stay hydrated. So I got a big, you know, like a tumbler almost with a straw that we could just fill up throughout the day. But anything with a straw would work. It's just something small that you might think of afterwards you might want. Because again, you can use small juice glasses that are light enough to hold, but you want to be filling it up all day long. You have to make sure you stay hydrated. So whatever is going to help you stay hydrated, and I also recommend that it has a straw, because literally I would have somebody in my family fill it up in the morning and just put it on the counter near me, and I wouldn't even lift it because it was heavy. It was full of water, but I would just go up to it and use that straw, and then whenever it was empty, I would ask someone in my family to fill it up again. And that kind of worked for us. But just keeping in mind, you're going to need a way to drink a lot of water and to stay hydrated, and that you might not be able to lift something heavy in the first few days. So a cup with a straw. Next thing I recommend is a way to track your medication. Just again, think ahead of time about it. I just used the Notes app on my phone, but my husband needed to do it the first few days because I was too foggy. I mean, I was on 4 different medications from the doctor in the first 2 weeks, and they all had different instructions of take with food or not, and how many to take during the day, and all of that. I had to write it down because I would totally lose track of if I took it or if I didn't take it. So just keep that in mind. Pencil and paper, phone, whatever, you'll want a way to track your medication. The next thing is definitely a luxury, but it was something I was so thankful I had, so I want to throw it out there. I have what I already mentioned is a walking pad. It is not a treadmill, all right? It's under $200, and it's something I got months and months ago for the winter season to be able to walk inside. It is literally just a flat pad. It only goes to 3.8. It does not have incline. It does not have handrails, so that's what makes it so much cheaper, but it also just rolls under your bed. But I am telling you, it was so awesome to have here for recovery. One, because it's Colorado in the winter and there's no guarantee I can walk outside with the weather. But two, I just was in no shape to walk outside and take any kind of chance of falling or ice or cold or anything like that the first like 4 days. But I had this walking pad and I just, before surgery, we put it kind of close to the wall. We pulled a chair close to it so I could use that for balance. And I've used it almost every day. And honestly, it's invaluable. So I have the link to mine in the resource guide. I know that it does have a price point, so I don't want you to feel like you need it whatsoever if it is not financially accessible to you. But if it is, it's something I highly recommend. And then the last thing is someone you trust. You are going to need, well, first off, they require someone else to drive you home from the hospital. All right, so that's the first thing. You can't drive yourself home. Second thing is whoever comes to pick you up or whoever's driving you home, they're going to teach them how to do the drains. They're going to talk about medication. I'm pretty savvy in healthcare, I will say. Like, I understand the language. I remember things. I got it. I take instructions. I do things myself. I have driven myself to surgeries in the past. I've had a lot of surgeries. All of that, and I can tell you, this surgery, I have no idea what was said afterwards to my husband when he picked me up. And we laugh about it now because he said, "Don't you remember they said that?" I'm like, "No, no clue. I don't remember that at all. I was so out of it," which is pretty typical. But for me, I was even more out of it than usual. So you're going to need someone you trust to pick you up and be told all that information. They drive you home, and then that person is with you, helping you for however long. So for me, that person is my husband, because I don't just mean someone that you trust. It's more than that. You want someone who can ask the hard questions of the doctor and remember the information, someone who can be really logistical, someone who can take the notes, someone who you trust not only taking care of you, but doing the drains, taking care of other things you need, helping you get in and out of the bath, setting boundaries for you if you need it. If someone wants to come over and visit and you're not ready, that person can put up a wall and say, "You know what, let's plan this another time." There's so many things that go into recovery as a whole. This, to me, has an extra level that I had not needed before. There's a whole other level of help that I needed after this surgery. And I have had some of you message saying, "Oh, I was able to do that myself. It wasn't a problem." And that's great, okay? Maybe you will. I personally could not. I didn't change my drains once. I wasn't allowed to move my arms that much. I couldn't even reach them because of the restrictions from my doctor. Then I had that nerve pain on top of it. I just couldn't do it. In the first few days, I was just too foggy to even know what was happening and be able to write down numbers, I think. So my husband changed them every single time for me. And I don't know, maybe the last day I could have done it myself physically. But I actually couldn't. I couldn't. He's the one that helped with all that. So he was my person in this. But I've had people tell me that their sister flew out to stay with them or their very best friend came. Like, not everyone truly is meant to be a caretaker, and it doesn't mean it's someone that you don't trust. It just means that that is not their gift to be a caretaker in this way. It does take a lot, and it's really hard, and it's really exhausting, and they need to be able to kind of block out. Like, my poor husband, when he was changing my drains, there were times I had tears running down my face because of this nerve pain a couple times, and he had to keep doing it. He didn't have a choice. He had to do it. So it takes a lot. And again, there's nothing, if it's not your partner, that's okay. It doesn't mean anything one way or another. But just know you're going to need someone at least the first few days, if not those whole 2 weeks, to be that person for you. And then the final thing I'll say, this is for people who might be listening who want to support someone in their lives going through this. I had someone message me and say, "My friend is going through this. What is just a nice gift basket or a nice gift that I could send?" I thought that was a really sweet question. And I have had so many. I'm just so blessed. I'm so blessed to have people in my life who have supported me and our family during this time, supported our kids. So I can say what has been the most helpful. You know, first off, just all the things that I mentioned. Actually, I had friends who, again, sent me that drain belt, sent me the hoodie. That was invaluable. I mean, that was so, so helpful. A pair of really comfortable loose sweatpants. One of the most beautiful, most used gifts was a dear friend of mine, a couple actually, who brought over. They had a blanket made for me, a really cozy blanket. I've used it every day. It has helped my heart and my spirit as much as my body. I'm still using it in bed. I told my husband, I'm like, someday this might not be on our bed, but right now I need it. It is my security blanket. I absolutely need it. So that was just a beautiful, lovely gift. Otherwise, just really logistical things. From the very beginning, having a couple people who I trusted implicitly with our kids that would be those backup pickup people for school, that's really helpful. You can just text and say, I'm your person. These are the days I'm available. Text me out of the blue. It can be last minute and I will pick up your child and bring them home for a play date. I've used those people. That was really helpful. Meals. I had someone set up a meal train. So unbelievably helpful to have that. I couldn't cook anything. So a meal train, or just sending DoorDash gift cards. We got DoorDash gift cards. Super, super helpful. For me, and people who love me and know me know this, that having our kids taken care of takes a lot of pressure and stress off of me. It gives me peace of mind when our kids are taken care of. So not only pickups for them, but also like sending, you know, Lego sets that would keep them busy for a couple hours, or a new game that would keep them busy for a couple hours was really helpful too. I said the cozy blanket thing. What else? Oh, this is a crazy one, but it was so awesome. I had good friends drop off like a self-care kind of bag right after I was diagnosed, and it had some bath salts in it, and it had a foot scrubber, like an automatic one that would kind of take calluses off your feet. I didn't think twice about that until a week after surgery, and my feet were just really bothering me, and I don't get pedicures or anything, so it wasn't like that. It's just I had these calluses. I couldn't use my arms much, but this thing, all I had to do was push a button and it helped like make my feet feel better. And I just pushed a button and that's all I had to do. And I was so thankful for that. So that was really nice. And I do think maybe like bath salts are nice because I could sit in a warm bath. Anything like that. Books. My wonderful sister-in-law sent me a couple books that she found for me that I could read, and my other amazing sister-in-law sent me homemade cards from her kids. Those things all meant so much to me. Everyone who sent me things like that, that came from the heart, that were a gift for me. And honestly, just cards. I got cards with quotes in them, saying, I'm thinking of you. All of those things count for something. That's what I'll say. Just sending a text, every text I get saying, how are you doing today? Thinking of you today. You're so strong. Another really, really sweet, amazing thing that has touched me so much is my girlfriends in Hawaii went on a hike for me in my honor the day of my surgery. That is something that I'll just never forget. But that was so, so special to me and important to me and absolutely amazing. It still blows me away. So I just want to say all those things matter. Any text you send matters. And saying even, you don't need to text me back, I just want you to know I'm thinking of you, that is really important. Just sitting in their pain with them. Everyone who said, you know what, I'm so glad this was caught early, and also, this is hard. I know it's hard. I'm thinking of you. You've got this. And I'm so sorry you're going through it. Saying both those things, you know, staying positive, but also really making sure you recognize for that person that it's hard, that it's a hard time, that it's going to be hard, that you're sorry it happened and you love them. Those things matter. Don't shy away from saying something just because you don't know what to say. Because I don't know if there's any right thing, but I'll say that all of those things, every card I got, every message I got, every one of those emails and texts, they help. They truly, truly do. Okay, that's it. An hour later, there you go. There's my almost month-long recap of where I'm at and how it's going. And I don't really have next steps except just to keep putting one foot in front of the other and healing. And that's what I'll be doing. That's what I'll be doing. And I'll share more, as I said, as I kind of can. I think it's kind of a long process now, or a long game, I should say. So in the meantime, I'm just going to keep giving content, and I'll be here for sure. And I'll come up with workouts and more recaps as I have them in the future. But mostly I just want to say thank you for being here, and for anyone going through this. All I can tell you is what people have told me that's helped, which is you're not alone. You can do this. You're strong. You've got this. Make the best decision for yourself. You can do it. Thanks so much for being here, and I'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much for joining me today on Meet Your Body. If you have a moment, please consider rating and reviewing this podcast, as it helps us tremendously. For more resources and workouts, you can visit my website, jessicavallantpilates.com, or find me on YouTube or Instagram at jessicavallantpilates.